Bickley and Murata, Social Studies.
1 o'clock is here.
And before we go to Sarah Cazell,
yes,
it's shaping up to be one of those days where you start and you're all hyped about what is to come in Arizona sports. Coyotes down 3-0 in the second. Bam, bam, bam.
Why you got to ruin this segment, Bickley?
Sorry about that.
Why you got a harsh our vibe?
We were going to try to do it. We were going to try to do it anyway. By the way, the Nashville Predators got some great names. The guy who scored the last goal, Yarn Croak.
Ooh.
They've also got a guy named Rocco Grimaldi.
Wow.
Is that not a great name?
That's Gambo's best friend growing up.
I used to cheat off Rocco Grimaldi.
That's right.
His sister.
Angelique Martinelli.
I was watching the Coyotes Nashville game the other day, and my wife came in and was like, NSH, who is that? And I'm like, Nashville, the Nashville hockey team. Guess what they're called? And she's like, I have no idea. And she's like, all right, I'll give you a hint. It's a Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. And she goes, the Nashville Kindergarten Cops.
That would have been a better name.
Yeah.
That would have been awesome.
I'm a cop, you idiot.
Oh, my gosh.
All right,
guys.
What do you got for us,
Social
Sarah?
Studies, it is brought to you by VJ's Sweet Bippy Pickle Tortillas. It's a mouthful to say and a mouthful to eat. Starting with the Phoenix Suns. Starting
you okay?
With the Phoenix Suns.
You all right there, Vinny?
I'm just trying to do my job, Vinny, if you don't mind.
You okay there?
Oh, you're doing it quite well.
Thank you. Well, as I mentioned in the update, the Suns and the Clippers, they get going just a couple minutes from now from the Orlando bubble. It's a huge opportunity for Phoenix against a very, very good Clippers team. So of the following three options, what most needs to happen for the Suns to win today? Is it DeAndre Ayton has a big game? Devin Booker has a big game, or the bench collectively has a big game?
What most has to happen?
Yes, obviously they all need to happen.
Yeah, I don't know how to answer that. I'm going to probably say the bench, I think, is the biggest variable, even though DA can be the biggest variable of all. I'm going to vote the bench.
That is a good question. You can make arguments for all of them, but I just think, you know, Booker continuing to play the way that he's played there, I think that needs to happen. Mm-hmm. Against a team like the Clippers, I think that needs to happen.
Okay. Well, according to our voters, all eyes will be on DeAndre Ayton. Yeah, 54% of them said he needs to have a big game for the Suns to have a chance against the Clippers. 33% say the bench, and then only 13% point to Devin Booker.
Hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, earlier in the show, you guys were talking about Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins, what we assume will be a fantastic tandem in Valley Sports, and Booker Nathan, who we were just talking about, already a great tandem in Arizona Sports. So can you name for me, please, three of the greatest tandems or duos in Arizona sports history?
Bickley and Murata.
Yeah, Bickley and Murata, number one.
That one like definitely that. Got some votes.
I like that. I think Fitz and Kurt Warner has to be there because they were so, it was so symbiotic what they did. Then what would you say, Nash Stoudemire?
That's up there. We talked about, I know they weren't working together, but to have a 1-2 punch like Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling is one of the most devastating 1-2 punches we've ever seen in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, it was.
So I'd put them probably at the top of the list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just about everybody who responded said Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire, Kurt Warner and Larry Fitzgerald, and then Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling. Who else did we have?
Charles Barkley and Kevin Johnson.
Oh, yes. We got some KJ and Barkley in there as well.
Kachuk and Roenick.
Ooh, Gambo and his sauces. Got a couple votes.
Hollandaise.
Applesauce.
Ranch sauce. Ranch. I don't know.
Nobody calls it that.
Okay, but Gambo probably does.
That's true.
Let's see. Who else? Oh. I actually really like this one. Gambo and made-up words, speaking of.
Gambo not even on this show, and he gets like...
I know.
Here's it from our listeners.
Well, don't worry. You're involved, too.
What?
Jarrett and his shirts. And then Wolf and Oh, ruining Pantera's most popular song. I disagree. I love it. I love it.
Who tweeted that?
I don't think I can say his name.
Whoops. Because it's hard to say, or because it's
no, because it's a bodily, it's a body part, and I don't think I can say it.
Oh my goodness!
Oh, I see it.
Yeah, I assume I'm not allowed to say.
I was gonna dive into an impromptu Pantera call out. I ran into the same problem you did.
You don't want to be screaming that body part.
I don't. I'm.
Are you talking to me, Blank Copter? Yeah, Blank Copter.
It rhymes with wrong copter.
somebody said Bonner and Cooper.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good
DeWanna
one.
DeWanna Bonner, yeah.
No, oh. Cedric Bonner.
Oh, Arthur was talking about W.
And Hunky yes. Cooper.
We're, oh. Oh, I was thinking W. I'm like, yeah, DeWanna is bomb, yeah.
My favorite from Justin. Greg Landry and Trumaine Johnson. Of your 1984 Western Conference champion Arizona Wranglers.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Somebody said Jared and...
He knows how to play your heartstrings, man. Yep.
Jared and soup.
Man, there's been a ton of great combos. Yeah.
You're not eating soup now, are you? Not when it's 150 out, are you?
Nothing no, can not stop so the soup machine.
The other day, he walked into the break room, Vinny, and he pulled out a tub of pasta. The amount of pasta he brought with him to work was crazy.
It was for 3 days.
Yeah.
It was leftover chicken parmesan and penne pasta. Delicious.
I thought it was like the family dining
huge,
you get
though,
at Buca. Yeah.
Somebody said, and I don't get it. I don't think it's funny. Somebody says the Arizona Wildcats and not having New Year's Day plans.
Aw, boo.
That is a great combo.
Okay, I do like this one from Anthony. His favorite Arizona sports duo, mustache and not a mustache. Today's was incredible,
epic.
By the way.
Boy, they
so good.
Today's
struggled.
Was awful.
Does your mom listen, Jarrett? Does your
Does
mom
my
listen?
Mom listen?
Yeah.
Could I apologize? That was just a barb made out of frustration, Jarrett. That was out of bounds.
My mom does not sound like Tom Weeks.
That really was
one of, oh my God, that was really,
that was
really
one of the most filthy things you have ever said, Vinny.
Not even close.
All right, we still have two questions left in today's social studies. Yeah, so we got to get this thing rolling. Kind of along the same vein, talking about great tandems, great duos in Arizona sports history. We mentioned earlier in the show, DeAndre Hopkins, he said yesterday, while building his chemistry, quarterback receiver chemistry with Kyler Murray, he expects that they will become best friends, which is absolutely adorable. Which current athlete would you most like to be best friends with? And it doesn't say current Arizona sports athlete, so just any current athlete.
Ooh, that's a deep question.
I know. There's a lot going on there.
There's a lot going on there.
I don't know if I have an immediate... This is going to require some thought.
I have mine for sure.
Who is it?
It's Diana Taurasi.
Really?
I would love to hang out with her.
She is pretty cool.
Dan is good friends with Diana Taurasi.
You know, make that connect.
But is Diana good friends with Dan?
Ooh.
Man, you really are saucy today.
Damn, okay.
You really are saucy today.
Come on. I'm just having... The social studies, I'm just having... Let's call it antisocial studies from now on. I'll just insult people.
While you guys think, I'll read off a couple responses. Or do you have yours, Dan?
No. I want to do this right. I want to come up with the right kind of... Because I'm sure there's somebody out there that I think that I would vibe with. And I know it's not Ben Roethlisberger.
That's fair. Okay, I'll read a couple responses from our listeners while you guys come up with your answer. We've got Colin Anderson. He says Rob Gronkowski. He would be a blast. Joel says Tim Tebow. Does he count as a current athlete? I guess he's still playing minor league baseball. No, I think.
Well, there's no minor league baseball.
Well, I guess that's true. Yeah, not at this point. Uh-huh. Larry Fitzgerald shows up quite a bit. Mr. Danger Waffles says Mike Trout.
Mr. Danger Waffles.
Mike Trout seems like a really boring friend.
I was thinking maybe because he's rich.
Yeah, maybe.
We'll pick up the check. And he has no neck.
Not all rich guys pick up the check, Jarrett.
Yeah.
I know.
No, that's how a lot of those rich guys stay rich.
That's right. Yeah. That's how they keep their money. Josh Kleiner says Archie Bradley, as long as he doesn't get too excited.
Yeah. Archie'd bring a lot of good energy.
I assume that's a I pooped my pants reference.
Yes.
If I have to do your job for you, dear.
I don't think that was a getting too excited problem.
I mean, what else would
what
else would Josh's problem be? Tweet us, Josh. Why
what
don't
was that,
you want
Jared? I didn't hear that drop. Would you just play?
I pooped my pants.
Poop fest.
Our very own Cody Fincher tweeted, Vince, you'd obviously be best friends with Philip Rivers.
Oh, obviously. Yeah.
If I ever got a chance to meet him, I'd probably like him.
Is that like your worst fear? That you're going to have to like the guy?
No.
Okay.
No.
One final question.
His
it's...
worst fear is living past 60.
Oh, gosh.
Living past 50.
Oh, no.
One last question.
It's going to be a hell of a year, guys.
Oh, my gosh. Well, speaking of getting older, you guys were talking about slang earlier in the show, how thirsty is popular in the NBA and with the kids
these
days. I
thought you meant slaying, like murdering. I'm like,
yes,
we were?
Not slaying.
Right, right. Slaying. Gotcha.
Although slaying is also, that's...
Yes, slay queen.
Butchering, right, yeah.
So, yeah, that's right. Okay. So the open-ended question, what was your favorite slang word to use when you were growing up? And, oh, I love this. What current phrases or terms used by the young folks bother you most?
I got a big list for the second part of that question.
Do you?
Did the music just change?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. We went really long today.
I think the way, and Sarah, you're guilty of this sometimes yourself, the way the younger generations slide over the letter T in words.
Yeah.
My kids do it constantly.
That's just pronunciation as opposed to slang.
Oh, to slang? Okay.
Yeah. I hate living my best life. I hate in my feelings. Drives me crazy. Pretty much everything
these days.
In the feels, yeah.
The word bae just drives me up a wall.
I think bae kind of fell off. You might be in the clear on that one.
Good. A lot of people felt
you're woke. Gambo swole.
Swole, I hate that word.
Yeah.
Hate it.
But what about swole mates? Do you like that one?
Swole mates.
Was that like a workout partner?
Yeah,
is that your workout partner?
Yeah.
No, I think I like that less.
Oh, it's insufferable. And as the kids would say, they would say swole mates instead of swole mates.
That would be if Broomhead and Gambo got together, Vin. would be swole mates.
It's
right
true.
There. They're your swole mates right there.
Do we even box jump,
one
bro?
One guy bench pressing Nebraska, the other guy doing box jumps at the age of 50 plus. Swole mates right there.
Oh, I can't talk that. Just drop the mic, Big. You've earned the rest of the day off, my friend.
Indeed.
Actually, don't go anywhere. We're not done yet. Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks,
Sarah.
Thank you.
You've earned it. You just can't have it. Social studies every day at 1 o'clock. With Sarah Cazell. Coming up next, the sports world changed on a dime. We went from nothing on television to everything on television. What has it meant for TV sports ratings? We'll get into that next. Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Marotta. Dan Bickley and Vince Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Go!
Welcome back, everybody. Dan Bickley, Vince Marotta. It's been a great week. It's been a great few days where real live sporting events are starting to kind of materialize, and some of them are meaningful, and it really feels like we've got a piece of our lives back, and I really appreciate that. This week is going to be the first golf major of the year, Vinny, and they're going to play at Harding Park in San Francisco, and I want to tell you this, and I'm going to tie it into what we were going to talk about with the TV ratings here. This golf tournament in San Francisco is going to be very interesting because this time of year in San Francisco, it's very chilly. Weather is very thick. This golf course is very long. I read they've got one par 5 over 600 yards, four par 4s over 450 yards, and a par 3 at 250. So this course is going to play very, very long, and it'll be interesting to see if a guy like Tiger can hang in a field like this when you're going to have to drive the ball really well. It also is going to be interesting to see how the ratings surge because golf has done better than I thought it was going to do, and I think maybe they benefited from being the first sport back at a time when no one had anything else. Because up until today, Tiger has played one tournament, and yet golf has done fairly well. For instance, last week's WGC FedEx St. Jude's Invitational, 3.2 million viewers on Sunday, 2.2 on Saturday. That is more viewers than every Major League Baseball game and every NBA game we've seen to date, with the exception of the Lakers versus the Clippers. That Lakers-Clippers game had a massive audience on TNT. That was opening night, and that was 3.4 million viewers. But last week's Sunday Golf Championship, which had Phil Mickelson involved, so I'm sure
Koepka was around.
And
Justin Thomas, who won it, was around late, too. Three big names.
Yeah, so maybe that's exactly – probably that probably fed into this. So there's been some takeaways early on from people who study this, and here is what one of these media experts wrote. Number one, early takeaways. Golf and NASCAR do better versus the NBA, Major League Baseball, and the NHL than you might think. Now, you put any of those sports up against football, and it's just a blowout. But when you take football out of the equation, these sports are all kind of grabbing the same slice of pie, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, personal viewpoint on it was, and you know where I was early in this process, when we started to see golf come back and NASCAR came back, and those were really the first major American sports to come back, and I was even going as far to watch Korean baseball and German soccer. I was really hurting to watch something live that was competitive. So golf did really benefit from that. And on the flip side, it's another failure for the sport of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Because baseball, ideally, if they could have got their act together, should have been back on July 4th weekend before even the NBA exhibition started or any of the NHL started. They really missed an opportunity to draw people in. And now that it's there, like as a consumer of sports television right now, it's almost overwhelming.
There's so much to watch. That's so well said. And I look at Major League Baseball, and you think about the optics and the spectacle they could have created on July 4th had they been focused on A and not B. And I think you're right. I think it was a big swing and miss for that sport. Maybe baseball. The other takeaway number two was that Major League Baseball and NBA, they're pretty much splitting their head-to-head weekend matchups. So any given basketball game in the bubble right now is going to rate just about as good as any given baseball game based on the regionality of the contest, if you will. So I think that's kind of interesting in and of itself, because Major League Baseball, they're benefiting clearly from a condensed schedule. There's a sense of urgency, otherwise you wouldn't know it from the Diamondbacks, but there's a sense of urgency within the sport that might be fueling day-to-day attendance. Whereas the bubble has been just such a unique concept, and you're picking up a season right at the very end and going into the playoffs. I'll be curious to see where those ratings go respectively, if it will continue to be somewhat equal, or if these basketball games will continue to rate higher and higher as they become more and more important.
I think that's a great question, 'cause I could see, just from an individual viewing standpoint, had the Diamondbacks come out with more urgency and were playing, you know, the opposite of what they've played so far, and they were 7-3 going into this second 10-game chunk of the season,
right,
it would become appointment television. But because it's been, you know, and I'm just, again, limiting this to the Arizona sports fan experience. I'm not saying don't watch. I'm saying it's hard to watch.
No, yeah.
When you sit down and you're pumped, and there's been several times, and you made fun of me for it before, there's been several times where I sit down with my scorecard and I'm like, I am so into this, and about two innings in, after, you know, six lazy ground ball outs, you're like, what else is there?
Yeah.
What else can I do?
Yeah, or a Robbie Ray outing, and you can go 25 pitches without a ball being placed into play, and you start pulling your hair out. So I think this is fascinating. The last takeaway was that baseball regional ratings have been great so far. Regional sports networks have seen a 31% increase in viewership over MLB's opening weekend compared with the previous season. And through July 29th, ratings across 25 different markets were up 18%. So it's fascinating because there's obviously a hunger there, and there was a massive yearning for live competition there. I think back over what we went through collectively. I remember binging on old-time sports heroes when they would show Muhammad Ali fights in succession on ESPN. Yeah. There were docu-series. Then there was like all that nostalgia stuff and watching old contests from yesteryear. And that was good. That gave us a fresh look at old events. And then came the docu-series. And then came those golf tournaments that I had found riveting. And now here we are, to where everything has kind of been thrown down in front of us. It'll be fascinating to see what the next few weeks bring as now people get over the, all right, sports is back. Maybe they start watching, maybe they stop binge watching as much as they are. Because yeah. I know I have been. I've probably consumed more live sports in the last week than I have in the last 10 years in terms of just sheer amounts of hours spent in front of a television watching.
Oh, Sunday for me was,
yeah,
the whole thing was, you know, in front of the television. And just imagine this moving forward. Let's say baseball, basketball, hockey all wrap up. So basketball and hockey will wrap up at a certain point. Baseball also in October. Football's able to start and college athletics don't.
Ooh.
This is a situation where the NFL could have the entire sporting stage in America, you know, from a team sport standpoint right. to itself. Imagine right. what those ratings will be for the NFL.
Yeah, can you imagine that?
Potentially.
Well, it's,
I wonder if they'll play Saturday games.
Well, and they've listen.
They will think if about, there's no college football. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, think about the poaching that they're already ready to do. Number one, the Saturdays that might be wide open, they'll jump right in on those. And number two, Kirk Herbstreit, who might come and broadcast NFL games because there might not be some in my overall point is that's going to be a fascinating social experiment in and of itself. What would the effect be of having the NFL without college football and watching the NFL try to stay sustainable when college football can't get off the ground?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's crazy times, man.
Oh, Suns came to play,
Devin
by the
Booker
way.
Devin Booker is lighting it up from three-point range right now. 24-18 Suns with about 3 minutes to go in the first quarter from Orlando. Booker's already got 11, has hit 3 three-pointers. They're getting ready to start the third period in Edmonton. Coyotes trailing the Predators 3-0. So a tale of two teams right now in Phoenix.
Yeah.
Real quick, here's
the interesting, still coming.
The interesting thing to look at, the Lakers clinched the number one seed.
Yeah.
I don't know how much the Clippers at a certain point, the rest of the bubble, like these other teams, I wonder how they're going to play the rest mm-hmm. of these, you know, play-in these six games.
I've been saying for years, one of the worst things about the Suns is they have not given a guy like Devin Booker big platforms to play in, because we've seen what he's done with those platforms in the past. Take a look what he's doing already today.
Yeah. Clippers, though, you know, higher seed, the worst team you play in the first round. That's something to keep in mind. We'll keep you updated on that as we go along. Cliff Kingsbury, the head coach of the Cardinals, spoke today from training camp, updated a bunch of things. We'll tell you what Cliff said next. It's Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Have not had those discussions. That's obviously an area that we respect and understand. Every person in this league has to do what's best for themselves and their family. And so I think you've seen the league is very understanding of that and want guys to do what they need to do in their own personal lives. And so I have not had those discussions yet, but that's something obviously we're open to.
Cliff Kingsbury, head coach of the Cardinals. That was earlier today. Since he made those statements via Zoom with the media today, there's been an update. The Cardinals have had a player opt out. Marcus Gilbert, offensive tackle, tweeted out a statement. After much thought and prayer, I've decided to opt out of the 2020 NFL season. While this decision was not easy for me, I felt it was the best decision due to my standing as a high-risk player with high-risk family members. I'm grateful for the opportunities that have been afforded to me over many years in the NFL, and I'm looking forward to returning stronger than ever for the 2021 NFL season. Furthermore, I'm sending out my thoughts and prayers for the safety and success of my teammates and all those playing across the league this year.
Okay.
Well said, classy.
Yeah.
And
his prerogative.
Absolutely. That's the protocol in place, and he's exercising it. But now the Cardinals are getting closer to the beginning of the season. Training camp is here. And, you know, Cliff Kingsbury covered a lot of other topics today, including Patrick Peterson. You know, he's obviously a very important player for this defense. This defense wants to improve as much as they can. They need to have a bounce-back 16-game season from Patrick Peterson. Here was Kingsbury on P-Squared.
Just being around him last year as the season went on, talking through him, talking through things with him, and just, you know, he didn't like the way it was going early. He wanted to come out and play like Superman, like he had his entire career, but it's not possible for any player to sit out 6 weeks and come back and be the player you are, you know, immediately without even really any live game practices or reps or speed. And so it took him a little while. And by that last month, he was playing as good as anybody in the league. And that's what he anticipates to be this season. I know he's on a mission, and I love that. I love that he has a chip on his shoulder. He knows how good he can be, and that's his expectation at all times. So I'm fired up to watch him play this year.
Yeah, if you haven't engaged Patrick Peterson, yeah, you talked about how important that can be for the defense.
I don't know how much I'm just going to blanketly accept that logic that you can't expect somebody to come in and be ready. I think we all really honestly believe that a veteran like Patrick Peterson would figure out a way to hit the ground running. He wasn't able to do that. Either way, it doesn't matter. It was a very erratic season for him. And it started with a precipitous fall from grace, and this is also a contract year for him. So you throw it all together. I mean, if Patrick Peterson doesn't have a chip on his shoulder, and he always does to begin with, but he, if he has still got all the requisite physical skill and traits that he once had, I can't see how this wouldn't be his best season. You would think, just from having to check up on DeAndre Hopkins in practice every day for the course of a football season, would keep him as sharp as steel. And so, yeah, I think that's going to be a given. Now, what then becomes a question, if Patrick Peterson plays and returns at that level from week one, what do we get from a guy like Robert Alford? What do we get from the other cornerback position? Does the field, I mean, do quarterbacks start picking on the other side of the field again? Are we going to encounter those problems? Or will finally Patrick Peterson have a good complement to a Pro Bowl level cornerback? And if, you know, that's the case, then the back end of the Cardinals defense should be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, totally agree. You know, we had referenced earlier about Cliff Kingsbury making comments about Kyler Murray and what he did in terms of conditioning. Here was Cliff Kingsbury talking about his second year quarterback, keeping in touch with him during the break, and that comment about Kyler's physique.
We stayed in touch. We text him probably once every 2 weeks or so, and just see where he's at, what he was doing, just checking in. And he's obviously put on some mass. You can tell he's bigger, thicker. I think he understood it's a long season. You're going to take a bit of a pounding, and he wanted to bulk up in that area. And he's been throwing with his dad, you know, since he could walk, and so that continued. And he's been sharp so far in these walkthroughs. I think the mental side of it, the game is going to slow down tremendously. Just his operation, his confidence level, his leadership. I mean, those are all things, even in the first couple of days of being around him, you can see he's taking big steps, and we just have to continue to take steps in the right direction.
It sounds all promising, and really in a sky's the limit kind of season for Kyler Murray.
Yeah, he's following the pattern of Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes. He's serious-minded. He's taken care of his body. I hope he stays healthy. It's the one thing that we can't take. Playing 16 games is a tremendous accomplishment for him as a rookie.
Do you think the getting bigger and thicker thing, that's a good sign that he knows he needs to stay healthy and that's how he thinks he's going to do it?
Well,
or is that just simply like another year in the NFL, getting older as a person, that's, you work out, you mature?
I think there's a filling out process for a lot of guys that come into the league, certainly, especially at quarterback. And I think, you know, going into this year, I didn't look at him. I mean, he's a small guy, but small and frail are two different things.
Yeah,
I don't view Kyler Murray as frail.
No.
So, but still, you know, the extra mass, I don't know. It depends on how you want to employ that extra mass. Do you want to be more aggressive in running the football, and that's why you're bulking up? I think you can get too big as a quarterback, too.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think the important thing is the confidence that bulking up just gives Kyler Murray. Whether or not it really buffers him from the harder hits in the NFL, that's debatable. But if it gives him a level of confidence, then that will result in his play in a really good way. So you got that. Oh, by the way, not to throw this in there, but I figure I might anyways. Craig Morgan tweeted out that Antti Raanta is unfit to play hockey, according to a Coyotes PR guy.
And we have that story now on ArizonaSports.com too. Matt Lehman put it up, and I guess it's pretty widespread now. Aiden Hill is the second goalie on the bench. There hasn't been any other language used than unfit to play.
Yeah.
Matt Lehman explains, the unfit to play designation is a vague term being used in the Edmonton and Toronto bubbles and is standard for injuries and illnesses of various kinds since the season started. Thus, it can't be deduced based on that language what exactly the problem with Raanta is. That's a weird way. The language the NHL uses in a lot of stuff is so ridiculous.
I was just
going to
say
that. Upper body injury, lower body injury.
I mean, that was going to say. If I showed up one day and I was unfit to work, what would that mean to you?
I don't know if you've been watching Kemper this game, but he's looking pretty unfit to play as
well. But what I'm saying is, in a perfect world, you would have given Darcy Kemper this third period off. You got to play again tomorrow. And this is, you're down 3-0. There's no coming back here, in my opinion. So I'd never suggest this if not for the fact that they've got to play back-to-back games. But in this case, I am certainly.
I don't know.
Yeah, you don't.
Maybe with Raanta the thinking is different. But let's say Rick Tocchet uses. Let's say Raanta is fit to play. You bring him in for the third period and he gets lit up for three goals. What does that do to the demeanor of the rest of the team? The confidence of the rest of the team going into a game tomorrow? I think you got to ride out Kemper.
Okay. All right. You don't want Darcy Kemper to get lit up in this third period and then deal with the results of that and the physical attrition of it all, especially now since it's clear, your number one goaltender is pretty much starting every game in the playoffs anyway. So it's just something to watch. I saw that and I thought, that's hockey verbiage that is just, it could be so many things, unfit to play.
With a lower body issue.
Yeah.
Well, the problem with
self-esteem.
The first thing you think of in these times is, COVID. But it could be a million different things.
Well, if it's COVID and you're in a bubble situation and you just put out that you've had 7,000 negative tests in your latest round, you can't be that vague with
the
language.
No, you can't. No. No, I agree with that.
Because I think the reaction, if it was something COVID-related, would be a lot different.
Agree.
Like maybe these two teams wouldn't be playing.
Which is, right? I don't get why they're just so vague about it.
Yeah.
Because it's the NHL. It's just what they do. And really, the paranoia really gets crazy around playoff time. I've experienced this from coaches who have wanted to literally decapitate me for asking questions about injuries after a game. The hockey coaches are convinced the other team, if they know where you're hurting, they will take the butt end of their stick and the blade end of their stick and jab you there repeatedly.
Yes. And nobody wants that to happen.
Yeah, you kind of get their logic.
Least of all the hockey player that's
injured. Right. It's that weapon that hockey players carry. You know what I mean? Baseball players don't carry around a bat with them everywhere they go.
No,
and
they don't.
Hit people with it. You know?
Especially if you play for the Diamondbacks.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
I'm sorry.
That's good. No, you're running hot today, dude.
Suns are up 31-30 with 9:39 to go in the second quarter. Yotes still trail 3-0, third period, 13 minutes and change to go in that game from Edmonton. So not the performance the Coyotes or their fans were hoping for today. It's been pretty one-sided.
Suns are hanging in there.
Yeah, they are. With the first stint of the bench, too.
Yep.
Looking promising. Coming up, we're back to wrap things up on a very busy Tuesday right after this. 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Quickly and Murata. Song of the Day.
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
I can tell it's the theme song for DeAndre Hopkins and Kyle Murray.
Okay.
I can tell we're gonna be friends. And for my money, some of Meg White's best drumming ever on this song.
Susie, through the park and by the tree, we will rest upon the ground and look at all the books we found.
Sorry, that was a cheap shot.
No,
we were gonna play.
Like I said, you're burning hot today. I like this Vitti.
We were gonna play
You know what? Your observation about Diana Taurasi, I think there might actually be an element of truth in that. At one point in time I thought we were like kind of cool as friends. I think she's more of a friend to me than she thinks of me to her. I think you might have been right on the money with that.
Wow. I was just taking a cheap
She run. Does like you, though. I can tell when she comes
on. You can tell there's...
We've made great content together. That sounds really creepy. That sounds right. No,
you want to get together and make some great content?
I've had some epic interviews with her. I had an epic playing horse against her when I didn't get a letter.
Now with her in the Olympics, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing too. It's that I kind of get Diana, so I kind of ask her questions that get her going off, because Diana is just, she just knows one thing, and that is the truth. And she'll say whatever is on her mind, and she is as hardcore as they come. And I love her. I think.
What was the subject when I played her in Vinnie Joe trivia?
Raiders.
Raiders trivia.
Yep.
That was a while ago. We were going to play a good Tom Waits song for Song of the Day, but we couldn't find a good one.
A good Leonard Cohen song.
Yeah, so we went with the White Stripes instead.
Uh-huh.
Some other headlines to update. Rafael Nadal, the latest tennis player to say he will not play in the U.S. Open over virus concerns. It is going to be a watered-down tournament.
It's going to be awful.
Yeah.
I don't know what's holding these tennis players back, to be honest with you. I really don't, but whatever.
I think, honestly, Bick, and this is me speculating, I don't think anybody who's overseas right now even professionally wants to come to the United States.
I think you're right. That has to be it. It's either that
Look at the players who have opted out. Nick Kyrgios has been oddly the voice of reason in all of this in tennis. I don't know if you saw his video statement the other day. Rafael Nadal not playing. We knew Roger Federer is not playing. Ash Barty, the number one player in the world from Australia, she's not playing on the women's side.
Novak Djokovic is finally wearing a mask after mocking the whole thing.
Yeah, Serena Williams, I believe, has already said she is playing. So there's an American player making that decision. I think it's nothing more than that, quite honestly.
Okay.
But it's going to be good to see tennis, but it's not going to be a great tournament.
Yeah, no, and I'm bummed out from that, because that's to me, that's a guilty pleasure for me, is watching all of the tennis majors.
Yeah.
Don't necessarily dig the French, but Wimbledon is a huge part of my annuals. Yeah, and the Open's a huge part of my sporting calendar.
Oh, I thought you meant just you don't dig the French.
Or the actual tournament held.
Right, yeah.
Indy 500 news. It was originally announced that the Indy 500 would be open to fans, but Roger Penske has said, nope, not going to happen. The 104th running of the greatest spectacle in racing as it's known will be held without fans the weekend of August 23rd.
Okay. I don't think that's all that consequential. You know what I mean? Fans who go to races love being there and love watching them in person. They love the communal feel of attending a race and a race weekend together. It doesn't really add to or affect the competition in one bit.
Yeah, I would agree. Suns still hanging on to a 4-point lead over the Clippers with about 6.5 minutes to go in the second quarter there. And the Coyotes still struggling. Did I say they had 13 shots after one period? Because now they have 20. That's 7 shots in the last period.
They've got 21 now. Right. Yeah. They're not. Yeah, they're They're getting ready for tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah, tomorrow is now another game during our airtime. Oh, yeah. That is going to be an enormous hockey game.
Yeah, it really is going to be.
If Game 5 is the pivotal game in the best of 7, then Game 3 has got to be it in a best of 5.
I know you've got some on this day in sports history. Do you know the big item on this day in sports history I was in attendance for?
Was it in Arlington,
Texas?
It was. Was it 1993?
It was.
Yes. Go ahead. You can give this
one. Robin Ventura, who is one of the nicest guys I have ever met in baseball, got hit on the arm by a fastball from Nolan Ryan, and for some reason on his way to first base, he just took a hard left and went out to the mound. His heart wasn't in it. I don't know why he did it. But
Which he even admitted halfway there, he's like, what am I doing here?
And he kind of bear hugged or tried to hug Nolan Ryan, who just pummeled him.
Yeah, put him in a headlock and punched him like several times.
Several times.
It looked like a 18-year-old beating up his 12-year-old brother.
Yeah. And everybody who knew the White Sox, in real time, we were going, what are you doing, Robin? And that just did not turn out well for him.
Yeah.
And it became the ultimate symbol of don't mess with Texas.
And Robin Ventura, who really had a great career as a hitter, but also a great hittee.
Yeah, right. That's right. That's a good point.
Yeah,
that's a very good point.
Another thing happened on that same day in 1993. It's an all-baseball edition of This Day in Sports History. Tony Gwynn of the Padres went 6-for-7 with 2 doubles in an 11-10, 12-inning win over the Giants.
Wow.
It was Gwynn's 5th game of the season with 5 or more hits, tying a major league record.
Wow.
The man was a machine.
He was. And there are smart baseball people that say had Tony Gwynn managed his weight better, he would have hit over 400 because he would have had enough infield hits to put him over the top. I mean, he was about as machine is the right way to put it.
Yeah. I've heard even on recent baseball broadcasts with all the shifting going on, it's like, yeah, that couldn't have worked. If you gave Tony Gwynn anywhere in the field, he's going to put it there. And that's become, very hard to do, but certainly a lost art in baseball.
Oh, yeah.
1934, Giants outfielder Mel Ott became the first player in Major League Baseball history to score 6 runs in a game as the Giants beat the Phillies 21-4. Ott, here's having a day. 4-for-4 with 2 home runs, a double, a single, drew a walk, and was hit by a pitch. All in the second game of a doubleheader.
That is having yourself a day.
1953. Vic Rashi. You remember Vic Rashi.
Oh, of course I do.
Right-hander.
Who is Vic Rashi?
A right-hander for the Yankees. He had a day, pitched 6 shutout innings, and went 3-for-4 at the plate, driving in 7 runs, which still stands as an American League record for a pitcher. Probably will stand forever now. Yankees beat the Tigers 15-0. He had a 2-run single in the second, a 3-run double in the third, and a 2-run single in the fourth. And I looked it up. I was like, man, this guy must have been a great hitter. Nah. He batted 143 that year with 11 RBIs, but he got 7 in one game.
Wow.
Something happened on this date in 1982 that will likely never happen again. Joel Youngblood became the first Major League player to collect hits for 2 different teams on the same day. He singled as a member of the Mets in a game against the Cubs in Chicago, then was notified he had been traded to the Cub.
The Cub.
That he had been traded to the Expo. He gets on a flight to Philadelphia.
As it were.
And then he singles in the Expos 5-4 loss. That's not it. Both of the hits for the Mets against the Cubs, the hit came against Ferguson Jenkins. And then at night, he singled off of Steve Carlton. So not only did he do it for 2 teams on in 2 different cities on the same day, but against 2 Hall of Fame pitchers.
Wow.
See, that's why baseball's great.
Yeah, that is true.
On this day in 1985, White Sox pitcher Tom Seaver picked up his 300th career win, while California Angel star Rod Carew collected his 3,000th career hit.
I was just thinking about Rod Carew when we were talking about Tony Gwynn, and I used to... he was one of those bat wieldsman kind of guys. Mm-hmm. I could not stand watching him hit. Bizarre stance, bizarre holding the bat, and he had the biggest wad of chewing tobacco in his cheek you've ever seen.
Yeah, the Coyotes definitely getting ready for Game 3 tomorrow.
Yeah,
it's 4-0 after a power play goal by Nashville. Oof. The whole Coyotes... Update on breaking news. The whole Coyotes team unfit to play today.
What the hell is going on?
And finally, 1989 on this day, Roberto Kelly of the New York Yankees. He doubled with two outs in the ninth inning, breaking up Toronto right-hander Dave Steeb's bid for a perfect game.
Oh.
Steeb surrendered an RBI single to the next batter, Steve Sachs, but also held on for a 2-1 win. It was the third time in two seasons that Steeb had lost a no-hitter with two outs in the ninth inning.
Oh, that's brutal.
Yeah. He finally got one the next year in 1990. The first,
holy cow.
First no-hitter in Toronto's history.
Wow, I didn't
know. He's one of those
that.
Guys, too, that in my formative years of being a baseball fanatic,
mm-hmm.
he was so good. He was an all-star every year.
Uh-huh.
And never got his due.
Yeah, he was from that era when the Toronto Blue Jays were actually cool, right? Lloyd mm-hmm. Mosby,
Jesse Barfield,
Kelly
Garth Orge,
Dane Orge,
Kelly Gruber,
that's
Ernie Witt,
Pat Hankin. That is great, Carlos Delgado, Eric Kinski.
Now we're just mixing up Blue Jay era.
Good job, Vinny. You are on fire today,
Roberto
man.
Roberto Alomar. Oh boy, I got one more.
Stay
story.
Salty,
I want to squeeze
Vinny.
In, I want to save it for tomorrow.
Okay.
That's going to do it for us. Now we will retire to the couch to watch sports for the rest of the day. Thanks to Max Kellerman for joining us. Thanks to you for listening. We'll catch you tomorrow. Burns and Gambo up next here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Rick Cerrone. Ha ha ha.